We're back on Filter, and that was Exuma. Doing Exuma, the Obia man. I always say it wrong. And now I've got Bruce Cowan. At this point, your Filter's a political interpreter.
How about that?
Yeah, I love it. It's let's keep it going forever. At least as long as this show is going, or as long as you still like me. So we had quite a week, and the week's not over. I have been on a roller coaster. I'm sure many of us have that feeling, right? I felt kind of in some ways terrible on election night. And then I woke up I woke up at 4 and started reading Twitter and the news. So it's not really, I don't know if we'd call that the morning officially. And then, since then I felt really positive. I mean, I felt scared, but I felt positive. I don't know. Are you having a similar roller coaster ride, Bruce?
Oh, it's been just like that. Everybody's been so anxious along the way, and, we've just had to be patient, and it's, taken plenty of ice cream and cookies, to get through it. Other people have their own ways of getting through. But I feel like that, I've been optimistic all along, and we didn't get that big thing that we wanted on election night, and certainly not since. But everyone's been patient. The tide seems to have turned late yesterday, and I think we'll have something more clear by tonight. But gosh, who knows?
Right. I feel like I've been saying that every day, or been told that every day, that just wait until the evening. And then we make it through the night and states haven't finished. And I've tried to have sympathy for a lot of these states that it's taking longer because, you read about some of the circumstances they're going through, and in order to accurately count and fairly count, it can take time. And then I read about Georgia vote counters having a COVID outbreak in the middle of counting that they were working through,
I didn't even hear about that. Yeah, the one night we're watching Arizona, the next day we're watching Nevada, and why can't they get past this percent and so on. And now Georgia looks like it could go to a recount. So we're all looking at Pennsylvania. And we knew that Pennsylvania would be slow, because they weren't even going to look at mail-in ballots until after the polls closed. So we are so really privileged to live in Washington State.
Yes.
And to have this whole mail-in ballot thing all figured out.
Yeah.
And nobody played around with it. Nobody messed with it or said you can't open them, you can't process them. We have a way to do it. So we're lucky that way. Pennsylvania is not, and some of the states just weren't really ready for it. And that's why it's taken a little time. But compared to a lot of places in the world, this is about normal.
And that was somewhat predictable. I mean, I got it in my mind that there was the chance for a landslide. And I remember saying to myself in the days leading up, I said, there's not going to be a landslide. It's not going to be a landslide. But then obviously there was a pocket in the back of my mind that said, oh yeah, but what if, oh yeah, that good dopamine hit is waiting for you. It's waiting for you on Tuesday night. It's coming. And and that night, it's funny. So I've just waffled back and forth, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I felt like, oh God, it's so disgusting that that I live in a country where I could disagree with so many, with 50% basically of my fellow country people. But then I have this feeling like, well, this is an incumbent race, there's an incumbent candidate. Of course, it's going to be a little bit wonky, in these results. And it's going to be, if it's a landslide, then I don't know. It seems like that's not that it's not something to be so worried about, that it's not a landslide, that of course it's funky because we're in unprecedented times.
Well, I agree. I think, though, that this is really different because campaigns had to reinvent them. We didn't have a playbook as party activists for how to do a campaign in COVID times. We weren't even thinking about this a year ago as we look toward the election. And when you say it's an incumbent, this is a unique incumbent.
Yes.
And it is really astounding to me that so many people could support somebody that has such little character and who really does not share our values, the values that so many of us hold in common. We've got a lot of work to do to understand that, and that's going to take time to understand as people write about it. I understand some of it, but there's a lot to learn from this, and we need to learn it and absorb it and find out how to serve the American people with government. I think that government can serve the people. We're going to have to figure out how under these circumstances.
So I've got a couple questions for you. I know you've been doing some thinking and you got things you want to bring up too, but let me hit you with this one because it's been nagging at me. You know, I gave money to some down ballot candidates, opposing Lindsey Graham, for instance, Jamie Harrison, and a lot of these down ballot races where we thought maybe, they got a lot of media attention and we felt like, this could flip we could flip the Senate. We could actually take McConnell out. We could take Lindsey Graham out. And I'm wondering, record amounts of money, record campaign contributions for these candidates, but ultimately didn't really buy them any points and certainly didn't buy them any victory. And I'm wondering could it be the campaign contributions themselves that may have actually united Republicans against these Democrat candidates? I'm curious what your feeling is in there going forward and how we support down ballot races in other states.
I think that money helps, and I think it needs to come from people.
Yeah.
We need election reform. The House passed a really good bill on that this last session, but it hasn't been heard in the Senate. Democrats need to win the Senate to be effective. Mitch McConnell can continue to be the obstructionist he's always been, especially since 2014 when he became the Senate Majority Leader. We're looking at cabinet appointments, judicial appointments, bills from the House that won't be considered. Nothing's going to get done. He blocked infrastructure. I did not expect to take him out. I did expect Amy McGrath to do better. And I think it is good to invest in those races and make him defend himself. He is really pretty unpopular in Kentucky, amazingly.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Harrison might not have made it this time. We're coming closer and closer in some of these states. They will turn blue. It's a matter of time. So getting these candidates out in front of people and showing the people what we have to offer and hoping for a coattails ride from the top of the ticket, these are all good things. This is not going to change. And it's going to take money, especially with COVID, where we can't, do the lower cost things of like meeting people in large public meetings.
Mm, I hear you. So tell me, I know you've got Georgia on your mind today. We're gonna listen to that song in a little bit. But tell me, what is significant about what's happening in Georgia in this election?
Well, they have two Senate seats, and neither one is decided as of right now. The Purdue Ossoff race, Purdue dropped below 50%. So right now, we did flip. The Democrats needed to flip three or four seats, and we flipped two. And Mark Kelly and Hickenlooper won. To get to a 50, and to have a majority, to be able to choose the majority leader with the president, with the Democratic president, we need to win both of those seats on January 5th. It looks like there will be a runoff between Purdue and Ossoff on January 5th, and there may be a runoff, and there will certainly be a runoff between Raphael Warnock and Loeffler. So the Senate hangs on that election on January 5th, and I think you're going to see a lot of money go there. I'm ready to contribute.
Can you tell for our listeners who may not know exactly how a runoff works? And I'd love a refresher. What is a runoff election?
Well, In one of these races, it was a special election that had no primary. So Loeffler was serving in the Senate, and he needed to win. I think he had been appointed, so he needed to win an election. And there were a number of candidates on the ballot, lots of them on the ballot just the other day. Raphael Warnock was the leading Democrat, and he actually had the most votes in the race, but he only had 33%. And with so many candidates, now it goes to top two, and they're going to have a runoff. That's one situation. The deal here is that in Georgia, you need to get 50% of the vote to become a senator, a U.S. senator. And that's a rule that they have, a law. Purdue also had to win 50%, and he slid below it in the last couple of days. So John Ossoff and Purdue, there were other people getting votes in that election. They will have a runoff election. It'll be a top two thing between Purdue and Ossoff on January 5th. Two Senate seats in Georgia, January 5th. That's the big showdown.
And that can make a difference between the leader of the Senate, basically Republican versus Democrat control of the Senate.
Yes. And all the committee heads. Imagine the judicial appointments, cabinet appointments that have to be approved, and whether to take up bills that come over from the House.
So why do you think there was such a strong Democrat showing in Georgia, which is typically a Republican stronghold?
Stacey Abrams, in two words.
The candidate for governor.
Stacey Abrams, she lost in her... I'm getting feedback.
Yeah, me too, but I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, and an echo.
There we go. Okay, maybe we're better now.
Okay. So, Stacey Abrams narrowly lost a race for governor a couple of years ago, and she did not take her foot off the gas. She continued to work, but she went to organizing and working on expanding the franchise and making sure that people didn't get kicked off the voter rolls, especially people of color, as had happened right before that election. She lost, as I said, very narrowly. She probably would have won if the Secretary of State, who was in charge of the election, was running against her for governor. And he, it looked really fishy. So she has, since that time, as I say, worked really hard to get more people registered and to make sure they turned out. So Stacey Abrams is really somebody I really see as a hero of mine. Keep your eye on her. She's still young. She's got a lot to accomplish. And Georgia is where she's been busy.
And she was considering a presidential primary run at some point, wasn't she?
Everybody wanted her to run. But she pretty consistently said that she had her work cut out for her already.
So she opted, instead of pursuing the presidency, to actually pursue a Democratic victory in states like Georgia. Or was it specifically Georgia she was working in, or was she working sort of across the southern states?
I don't know for sure. I think across the southern states, but she specifically was working in Georgia. She knew that state inside out.
So we can see that as just what the spoils of hard work and organizing can make a traditionally red state potentially go to blue.
Yes, and I think it's wonderful that Georgia is the focus right now. The heart of the Confederacy, so many disenfranchised African-American voters there over the years, the history of slavery. I think it's quite poetic that Georgia is on all our minds right now.
Yeah. So, let's go ahead and play that song now, and then we can get on to the if we have to talk about fraud and other things. But let's listen to Georgia on My Mind by Ray Charles. Bruce brought it for us, and we're talking about Georgia, and we're talking about the election results. So stay tuned for more cutting, insightful wisdom from Bruce Cowan on Filter on KPTZ 91.9 FM. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Bruce Cowan from the 24th Legislative District and sort of our political correspondent here on Filter. All opinions that you may hear are the property of me, Paul Rice, or Bruce Cowan in this case, and not the opinions of KPTZ and its management. We are completely owning ourselves and owning our own thoughts here. Isn't that right, Bruce?
Oh, absolutely.
So we went to Georgia with Ray Charles, or at least we went there in his mind, and we were talking a lot about Georgia in the first half of our set here, and the hope that we feel, you know, at least as Democrats from that. And I guess I want to talk a little bit about, I do want to talk about generational change in Jefferson County, but before we hit that, I just want to talk a little bit about your opinions about, you know, the potential for President Trump to play the fraud card and the lawsuit card here. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you seeing from his contest to these things? Are you following this stuff, and do you see any of it as being seriously threatening to the state of this to this election and to our democracy?
I certainly saw it as a possibility earlier. I don't see too much. I am not sanguine about this, but I am very grateful that nothing has been going on really much this week. I don't think that he has the backing now. I think that everyone is calling for us to all to pay attention to the election and to honor it. If we share one value, it would be democracy. And the states and the counties involved in counting the votes, I think that America has confidence in them. And we'll just have to see how it comes out and see what happens. But I hope, my fond hope, is that this all goes smoothly. And I think that good groundwork has been laid for that and good preparation among people. And I see today that a lot of former Justice Department Republicans are calling for calm and for honoring the election.
So there's hope. There's hope that the apocalyptic feelings that a lot of folks were having, myself included, may ultimately be unwarranted. And this may be more of the whimper than the bang.
Well, these lawsuits, none of them have amounted to anything. There's no evidence of anything going wrong, and he's doing what he always does. And, you know, as used to that as we've become, I think that even among his supporters, they see it for what it is. And it's just really the last gasp, the last grasp at power and trying to hold on.
Well, let's move on to Washington State and then down into Jefferson County. Any victories, you know, that you were excited about in Washington as a whole? The sex ed law, for instance, as a former teacher, maybe you have some thoughts on that, on 90 and or Culp and Inslee?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really good about the Washington State results. I think that the Democrats all did very well in the state executive races. The governor getting about 60% support, albeit almost entirely from Western Washington, is a good sign that people understand the challenges we're facing, and that a small town police chief with a department of one who just lost his job might not be qualified to be our governor. I understand that people are frustrated about COVID, and a lot of that frustration got channeled into this.
Yeah.
But it really was, you know, it doesn't matter how many signs you buy if you don't have the qualifications for the job.
And
so I feel good that you know, Jefferson County especially turned out, the state turned out. Jefferson County is at 80% turnout right now of votes that have been counted. We could end up closer to 90. We could end up at the top of the state. Democrats were looking to flip two of the state executive positions, and we did flip the treasurer to a Democrat. We did not flip the Secretary of State, and Kim Wyman will stay there for another 4 years. We had hoped to flip a congressional seat down around Vancouver, but that didn't happen. We do have a new member of Congress who is taking Denny Hecht's seat, and her name is Strickland, Marilyn Strickland. And so she'll, that was a Democrat on Democrat race in the 10th district around Olympia, Denny Hecht's seat. Denny Hecht won the lieutenant governor position in a Democrat on Democrat. And when I looked at the electoral map, Denny Hecht won nearly all the counties, but the ones he didn't win were won by the write-in, Joshua Freed, who ran as a write-in. And he won some counties in eastern Washington. So he wasn't the second place finisher, but he did win some counties. So that was kind of surprising.
How did he not end up on the ballot? I mean, were the Republicans just doing something else, or they forgot to register somebody for that race or promote somebody that they had to end up being a write-in candidate? Because they could have had some success there if he was on ballot.
He was an actual candidate for governor, Lauren, which was a very crowded field with 30-some candidates, and Lauren Culp got 17% of the ballot in the primary, and he was in the top two, so Lauren Culp went forward. Joshua Freed was there, and he washed out. In the lieutenant governor's race, it was also very crowded, too many Republicans, and so it ended up with two Democrats as the top two, and they went forward. You can run as a write-in, but you can't run as a write-in if you already ran in the primary for that position. So Joshua Freed switched over from governor to lieutenant governor and ran as a write-in there.
Got it. So covering the bases, trying to get as much spread of representation as possible, no matter how ineffective it ends up being.
Yeah, before the top two, we were pretty much assured of having a Democrat and a Republican in each race. Since the top two, we often have, we had a treasurer race where we had two Republicans running against each other in 2016.
Well, then, so getting back down into Jefferson County, kind of the results that we saw here, Heidi Eisenhower was victorious in her race for District 2 County Commissioner. And that was an interesting one where the Dems did not endorse either candidate or endorsed both candidates. Was that the way it went?
The Jefferson County Democrats and the 24th Legislative District Democrats did a dual endorsement in this race and endorsed both of them and said, yes, both of these people are really Democrats. We had three Democratic women filed for this office. Nobody else did. No Republican filed. Amanda Fenaro was in third place in the primary. She threw her support to Heidi Eisenhower, who had a really pretty strong lead. Lorna Smith stuck it out, but she couldn't overcome Eisenhower's advantage. And I admire all three candidates. Anybody who puts themselves out there is really taking a big risk and opening themselves up to all kinds of fair and unfair criticisms. We did have a robust community conversation. Really, I'm awed at the spending in this race. The three races combined cost almost $100,000.
Wow.
And that's more than twice as much as any previous race.
Why do you think that is? That's money that, well, yeah, talk about that, because I don't have any immediate insights on it.
Well, candidates raise money, and it takes money to run. And it takes probably $20,000 to $30,000 is what we usually estimate for a county commissioner race in Jefferson County. Kathleen Clare raised a little over $30,000 a few years ago. And money's important for buying newspaper ads and sending out mailers and buying signs. Mostly it's the ads and the mailers. Those are the big ticket items. We don't have broadcast media around here. So, you know, you're not buying TV ads and radio ads, that kind of thing.
We're on the radio. but I get what you mean.
I don't think we can buy ads.
No,
on KPTZ.
No, don't do it. Yeah, it's not possible.
it's not possible.
This is more spending than usual. You're thinking, or it's about average.
By far.
Okay.
No. It's more than twice what's ever been spent in a commissioner race.
Wow.
And I think it had to do partly with the top two candidates. One was really plugged into a broader environmentalist network, and one of them had been a professional fundraiser for nonprofits, and they were just good at raising funds, and that's great. I'm not sure that after a certain point that it made much of a difference.
Mm.
It was good for the leader.
Yeah.
They got to sell a lot of ads, and I hope that they were able to print a lot of letters, and they upped their coverage. I was disappointed a couple of years ago, and under this there were new owners some years ago, but there's new management in the last year or two, and that I hope that they are encouraged by the public interest in elections to do more political coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
This is the leader.
So, yeah, the leader. And the PDN also benefited from the advertising, of course. I wanted to talk about the generational change and just kind of the evolution of the, you know, what's happened here in Jefferson County and with the Board of County Commissioners. So less than 20 years ago, we had three white male Republicans as county commissioners, less than 20 years ago. Things started to change, and we had three white male baby boomer Democrats as our county commissioners.
Mm.
And then Kathleen Clare was the first woman elected who completed a term, and then Kate came on board. And then Greg came on board, and now we have Heidi. And this means we have three county commissioners under 50 years of age.
Mm.
So that to me is a lot of change for 20 years, and I welcome it. It's still all white folks, but at least it's not baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that this is encouraging to some of your younger listeners who might be looking at the Port Commission seat in District 1 that's opening up, perhaps, and they might start to talk to people who have experience in elections like me or public servants who are in these positions right now and might start thinking about the city council. In 2 years, we will also be electing all new, the more ministerial offices in the courthouse and the sheriff. These will all be in the ballot again in a couple of years. So,
if you're thinking about running, call Bruce.
Put it on your radar.
Yeah,
there are always more elections, and the school board elections are a good place to start. Or city council, and I'm seeing a generational change there too at city council.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of great young folks there.
Yeah.
So and many more women involved than in the past, and I think that's wonderful.
So talk about a little bit the possibilities you see from this kind of generational change in terms of our governance. You know, how they'll be able to reflect the needs better of our younger populations, but they're kind of like in between, so they can also identify with baby boomers. I mean, is there things like that you can think about as real positive consequences?
Yes, I think that their peers are the folks who are struggling in the community to be, you know, I'll be the first to admit that the opportunity for younger folks to become established here, even professionally, are not what they were, and that the cost of real estate is through the roof. We certainly can't legislate the cost of real estate, but we can ameliorate these effects in other ways. And I think that by being by having peers who are actually going through these struggles of trying to run a small business, of trying to buy a home, trying to rent a home. Deborah just saw, my wife just saw, on Nextdoor a house that was a two-bedroom house, and it's over $2,000 a month. Things need to change. We need to create opportunities for people here, the people who do the work here, the people who are earning wages and perhaps not salaries. It's a hard place to live.
Yeah. Well, before we end our session today, do you have any other things, results from the election that you really want to make sure people know about, or any final thoughts, I guess I'll ask you for?
Yes. Jefferson County really stands out on the Olympic Peninsula. 70% votes for Democrats. And this balances out. The Clallam County, thank goodness, went for Biden this time.
Oh.
They just narrowly went for Trump last time. I think that we can be proud of ourselves for our turnout. And I'm really glad to see us be blue. I did not mention the state legislature. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Steve Theringer, Kevin Vandeweghe, and Mike Chapman also got in the high 50s percentage-wise in our district. And that has a lot to do with the almost 70% that they get from Jefferson County. So I think that we bat above our weight as a county, and I'd like to see us continue to do that.
Well, thank you for all your insights today, Bruce, and hopefully the next time we talk, it'll just be nothing but good news.
Oh, you bet. I'm ready for some good news.
Yeah.
Maybe tonight, huh?
Yeah, maybe tonight. Well, we'll see. Take care and have a good one.
All right. You too. Thank you.
Bye, Bruce.